Imagine trying to map every single tree, every leaf, every blade of grass in an entire sprawling forest. Now think about the immense computational power you'd need to not just map it, but to simulate how every single one of those tiny elements moves, interacts, changes over time. That's essentially the challenge, more or less, of simulating protein dynamics at the atomic level.
Yeah.
But what if we could simplify that map? You know, zoom out a bit and still understand the crucial dynamic patterns of the forest, but incredibly fast.
Welcome to Science TLDR, where we give you the too long, didn't read version of groundbreaking scientific papers straight from the source. Today, we're doing a deep dive into a really fascinating new study. It's titled Navigating Protein Landscapes with a Machine-Learned Transferable Coarse-Grained Model, and it was just published in Nature Chemistry.
Okay, so our mission today is to unpack how this new machine learning approach is dramatically speeding up protein simulations. We'll explore what it can do that previous methods maybe couldn't quite manage, why this represents a pretty significant leap forward for understanding complex biological processes, and also, importantly, we need to talk about where its current limits are. By the end of this, you'll have a quick but comprehensive understanding of this powerful new tool in biomolecular science.
Great. So let's start with the core problem this paper tackles. The immense computational cost of protein simulation. The main method people use to simulate how atoms and molecules actually move, you know, watch proteins fold, bind, do their thing, is called molecular dynamics, MD for short.
Right, MD. And the sort of gold standard within MD is all atom molecular dynamics. This approach models every single atom, everything, often including all the surrounding water molecules too. It's super precise. But the catch is, as the paper puts it, the extreme computational cost. It makes it basically impossible, or at least impractical, for large systems or for watching things happen over biologically relevant timescales. Milliseconds, seconds, forget it. It's like you said, trying to simulate every single air molecule in a hurricane, you get the detail, but the compute power needed is just staggering.
Exactly. It's completely prohibitive for many real-world questions. And that's why the idea of coarse-braining, or CG, came about. Instead of every atom, CG models simplify things. They represent groups of atoms as single beads or pseudo-atoms. This drastically cuts down the computation needed, and sometimes it gives you a clearer view of the bigger picture, the macroscopic behavior. But, and this is a big but, developing a CG model that's universal, fast, and crucially accurate, that's been a long-standing challenge.
Rough.
Simplify too much, and you lose the essential chemistry, the predictive power. It's a real balancing act.
Okay, so that's a tightrope walk. Simplify for speed, but don't lose the crucial details. How did these researchers manage it? This is where the new paper comes in, with CG Schnett. They combined what deep learning methods with a bunch of existing all-atom simulation data.
That's the core idea. They developed a new bottom-up coarse-grained force field. That's the CG Schnett model. And maybe we should quickly break down force field and bottom-up here.
Good idea. So force field.
In MD, a force field is basically the rule book. It's the set of equations and numbers used to calculate the forces between particles, atoms, or these CG beads based on where they are. It defines the energy of the system.
Got it. Like the physics engine for these molecules.
Pretty much. And bottom up means this force field is fit to match the equilibrium distribution of an all-atom model. This is key. It learns the interactions directly from that high-resolution, super-detailed atomistic data. It's not based on someone's preconceived rules. It learns from observing the real thing in atomistic detail.
Ah, okay. So it learns from the best available data. But does it only work for the specific proteins it learned from? Or can it generalize? That seems vital.
That's exactly what makes this approach so powerful, its chemical transferability. The paper shows it can be used for extrapolative molecular dynamics on new sequences not used during model parameterization. Basically, yeah, it learns general rules. It can be applied to proteins it's never encountered before during its training. That's a huge deal for making it a truly useful general tool.
Okay, that is impressive. How does it actually do that? What's the tech underneath?
It uses a deep graph neural network architecture, or GNN. Specifically, it's called CG-Schnett, building on an earlier GNN called Schnett. GNNs are really good at handling molecular structures and their interactions. And crucially, this GNN can capture multi-body interaction terms.
Multi-body interactions.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean in practice, and why is it hard?
Well, think about it. Atoms in a protein don't just interact in pairs. One atom's position affects the forces on many others nearby, and those interactions are complex, not just simple one-on-one forces. These collective multi-body effects are really important for getting the protein's thermodynamics right and how it behaves in water solvation effects. Traditional CG models often struggle with this. They simplify too much, but GNNs seem better equipped to learn these more complex collective influences.
Right, they can see the bigger picture of the local environment. So what did they train it on? You said it learned from all atom data.
Yeah, the training set was actually relatively small for deep learning, but diverse. It included 50 small protein domains from a database called CCATH, plus about 1,200 pairs of simple building blocks like mono and dipeptides. And they also cleverly used something called decoy frames.
Decoy frames, what are those for?
They're essentially deliberately distorted non-physical structures. They feed these to the network during training and label them with zero force. It's like telling the model, look, this is junk. Don't ever predict forces that lead to structures like this. It helps prevent the model from going off the rails and predicting impossible things, like atoms crashing into each other.
Ah, like guardrails based on known bad examples. Makes sense. And the level of simplification, the coarseness.
They chose a resolution that keeps five key atoms for each amino acid residue, the backbone N, CS, CO, and the side chain col atom, or CALA, again, for glycine, which doesn't have a call. This five-bead mapping is neat because it still lets you easily see secondary structures like helices and sheets. And there's one more piece. The GNN's learned forces are combined with a pre-calculated prior energy model.
A prior energy model? What's that adding?
Think of it as another layer of physical common sense. It's based on known physics, and it helps prevent the model from exploring really weird non-physical shapes, especially in situations the GNN didn't see much of during training. It ensures the model behaves reasonably even when extrapolating. It's this blend of deep learning and basic physics that makes it robust.
Okay, fascinating setup. Deep learning, graph networks, learning from atomistic data, plus physical guardrails. So the big question, does it work? What do the results show?
Right, the proof is in the pudding. First, they tested it on small proteins it hadn't seen during training, things like 8-residue peptides and some well-known fast-folding proteins, Chignilin, TRPKH, BBA, Villain. And critically, these test proteins had less than 40% sequence similarity to anything in the training set, so it was a real test of transferability.
And then how did they judge success? What were they looking for?
They looked at several things. Free energy landscapes, basically maps showing the stable and unstable shapes a protein can adopt. Metastable states, those are stable intermediate shapes, not necessarily the final folded state. Then standard metrics like fraction of native contacts, Q, how close is it to the known folded structure, and K root means square deviation, RMSD, another measure of structural similarity.
And the results? Did it capture the right shapes and energies?
Yeah, they were pretty compelling. For the small peptides, CG Schnett did a great job reproducing the free energy landscape seen in much slower all-atom simulations. That's a tough benchmark. For the fast-folding proteins, it successfully showed folding and unfolding transitions, finding stable states very close to the known native structures high Q, low RMSD. It even found a known misfolded state for Chignilin, just like the all-atom simulations do.
That sounds very promising. Any cases where it struggled a bit more?
Well, yes, there was some nuance. It did better on Chignilin, TRPKH, and Villain compared to BBA. BBA is known to be tricky for CG models because it has both helices and beta sheets, a complex fold. And the energy landscapes from CG Schnett were generally smoother than the all-atom ones, which you'd expect with coarse graining. But importantly, CG Schnett still managed to resolve multiple distinct metastable states for these proteins. That's a key advantage over many other CG models, like OSM, UNRS, or Martini, which often just collapse everything into one single state and miss those crucial intermediates.
Okay, so it captures more of the folding pathway details than some other simplified models. That's good. And they pushed it further, right, to larger proteins.
Exactly. This is where the speed advantage really shines. They applied it to bigger proteins, the 54-residue engrailed homeodomain, and a 73-residue protein called alpha-3D. These are systems where, as the paper states, atomistic simulations cannot sample the folding-unfolding transitions in reasonable time. That really underscores the problem CG Schnett aims to solve.
So could CDGNET handle these bigger challenges?
Impressively, yes. Starting from completely unfolded chains, it successfully simulated the folding of both proteins into their correct native structures. It also matched the kind of flexibility you see in certain parts of the protein, like the ends, that are known from all atom models. And interestingly, for Alpha3D, it even found an alternative folded shape, a different three-helix bundle, which actually reflects how that protein was originally designed. So it's exploring relevant structures.
Wow. Okay, so it scales up. What about things beyond just folding a single structured protein? Did they test its limits there?
They did. Two really interesting areas: intrinsically disordered proteins, IDPs, and predicting the effects of mutations.
IDPs, those are the flexible shapeshifter proteins, right?
Exactly. They often only take on a defined structure when they bind to something else. They use the PUMA-MCL1 system as a test case. PUMA is the IDP. When they simulated PUMA alone with CG-SNET, it stayed disordered, which is correct. But when they simulated it with its known binding partner, MCL1, PUMA rapidly folded into a helix and bound correctly. And it didn't do that when simulated with a control protein it doesn't bind to.
Wait a second, that's huge. It could predict this induced folding binding event, even though you said earlier the training data didn't contain any protein complexes.
Correct. That's one of the standout findings. It suggests the model didn't just memorize specific interactions. It learned the underlying physics well enough to predict this complex binding behavior in a totally new context. It generalized non-trivial interactions.
That implies it's really capturing some fundamental principles of how these molecules interact. Amazing. Okay, what about the mutations? Predicting Kadam.
Right. The change in folding stability when you mutate a single amino acid. Super important for understanding disease and for protein engineering. They tested this on ubiquitin, a protein that was very different from the training set, only 18% sequence similarity. And the EG values, predicted by CG-SNET, showed a strong correlation with experimental measurements. The paper quotes a Pearson correlation of SKIRO-6-3 and a mean absolute error of about 1.25 kilorepopole.
How good is that result, practically speaking?
The authors state it's comparable with what can be obtained with all atom approaches, but crucially, CG-SNET does it vastly faster, being able to quickly and accurately predict how mutations affect stability, even for unrelated proteins, is incredibly valuable. Think about screening drug resistance mutations or designing more stable enzymes.
Right.
It speeds up that whole process enormously.
Okay, so summing up the impact, this sounds like it could really accelerate research in a lot of areas.
Definitely. The paper argues this showcases the feasibility of a universal and computationally efficient machine-learned CG model for proteins. Being orders of magnitude faster than all-atom MD just opens up exploration of bigger systems and longer timescales that were simply out of reach before. We can start looking at slower, more complex processes.
Now, lots of people have heard about AlphaFold for predicting protein structures. How does CG-SNET relate to that? Is it doing the same job?
That's a really important distinction to make. Now, they're different tools for different jobs. AlphaFold is amazing at predicting the most likely final static 3D structure of a protein. CG-SNET, on the other hand, is about dynamics. Its goal is to explore the complete free energy surface, all the different shapes a protein might adopt, folded, unfolded, intermediates, and how it moves between them over time. So AlphaFold predicts the destination. CG-SNET tries to map out all the possible routes and journeys.
Got it. Different but complementary tools. Now, no model is perfect. What limitations did the authors acknowledge? Where does CG-SNET still fall short?
They were refreshingly upfront about that. One point is that IDPs, while qualitatively handled well in the binding example, still tend to look too structured and compact overall compared to reality in the current model. Also, predicting the precise relative stability of the free energy difference between folded and unfolded states isn't perfect yet for all systems. Like for BBA, it found the folded state, but still predicted it as less stable than unfolded overall. Improving that free energy accuracy is a key goal.
And technically, anything about the model architecture itself?
Yeah, the GNN they used, SNET, is fairly simple by today's deep learning standards. It lacks things like attention mechanisms or explicit ways to handle long-range interactions. More advanced architectures might boost performance, especially for really big systems or protein complexes where long-range forces matter more. Another big one. It was trained at one specific temperature, 300K. It's currently not expected to work reliably at different temperatures or pressures without retraining on much more data covering those conditions.
Right, so temperature transferability is still a hurdle. And they also mentioned the choice of CG resolution itself is something to explore further. So that brings up a question for you, our listener. Thinking about these strengths and also these current limitations, where do you see the most exciting, immediate, uses for a tool like CGSNET? And what improvements do you think are most critical for the future?
Okay, let's crystallize the main takeaways from this deep dive. Three key results really stand out.
First, CGSNET accurately maps out the folding dynamics and the intermediate metastable states for small proteins it hasn't seen before. And it does this with better detail, capturing more of those energy landscape features than many previous CG models.
Second, it successfully scales up. The model can simulate the folding of larger biologically relevant proteins, the kind that are just too slow for all atom methods, allowing us to study processes we couldn't access computationally before. And third, it shows remarkable extrapolative power beyond simple folding. It can model complex events like the induced folding of disordered proteins when they bind, and it can predict the stability effects of mutations with accuracy comparable to all atom methods, even on very different proteins.
Absolutely. This work definitely pushes us closer to simulating complex protein behavior much, much faster. So the final thought to leave you with is this. With this kind of computational leap enabling faster and broader simulations, what fundamental questions about how proteins work, how diseases develop at a molecular level, or even how we design new medicines? What questions do you think we might finally be able to answer?